Hey, welcome to the Start Good Things podcast. My name is Rob Overholtz.
I'm Eric Bryant.
And we want to welcome you to episode one.
The very first episode.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to experience today on the first episode?
We had an opportunity to interview John Burke. He's an author. He is the lead pastor at Gateway Church in Austin. And his book, Imagine Heaven, was number one on Amazon.com. On the day of this interview, a week later, it was in the top 10 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. But before we get to that interview, we probably owe you an explanation about what is Start Good Things.
Start Good Things. We're about empowering artists and entrepreneurs to make the world a better place.
But what does that mean?
Well, let me fill you in by reading to you what you put on startgoodthings.com.
Oh, brilliant.
We are believers, in the best possible sense. We believe in a better future. We believe in and are for humanity. We are ordinary, but we believe in the extraordinary. We believe that ordinary people working together can accomplish extraordinary things. We believe that when this happens, it makes for a better humanity and a better future for all people. I love it. Fantastic.
And a little bombastic.
Which reminds me of one of my favorite songs from 1995.
Oh, yeah. Though we don't take ourselves too seriously, we do take what we do seriously. And what we do is constantly look out for the radical entrepreneur, the rare artist who is creating change. So if you're an entrepreneur or an artist tackling the toughest issues in society, we want to know what you're all about so we can help you get all about that. But if you want to know more about us, check out our website at startgoodthings.com.
And here on our podcast, we're going to have a lot of fun. One of my favorite segments I know you're going to enjoy are Rob's Rants.
Because you know I do. And you're also going to love when we hear from listeners and we get responses from Dr. Eric Michael Bryant.
Well, today we're going to feature most of our time in our interview with John Burke. I know you'll find it fascinating.
Yeah, John, it's amazing. And congratulations are definitely in order. So you've written a book called Imagine Heaven. And I can't help when I think that to hearken back to one John Lennon. Are you familiar with John Lennon, John? Do you know John? John Burke, he's famous too. He's another famous John. He did a few things. So he actually famously wrote, actually sang, I think it's a song lyric. He said this, "Imagine there is no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky." And then some 44 years later, John Burke comes along and writes a book, Imagine Heaven. So John Lennon says, imagine there is no heaven. You say, no, imagine heaven. Imagine it. Completely imagine it in all its glory. And I can't help but wonder, John, I've been meaning to ask you, but I know you've been a little busy. In fact, I even hear that this is not your most important interview this week. Hard for me to believe, but I've heard that.
It is.
No, that's great. And just want to ask, was that the purpose for writing this book, was to verbally joust with John Lennon? And if it wasn't the purpose, what could the purpose possibly have been?
The only purpose really was just being a big Beatles fan. I just wanted to talk to John Lennon.
That's great. No. That's awesome.
No, actually, you know what's really funny, Rob, is I was just in Central Park in New York City, just having some time, you know, praying, walking around, and I had this kind of moment that was just so bizarre because I walk into this beautiful plaza and I'm hearing languages from all nations there in Central Park. And it's just a gorgeous day, you know, fall colors. And I'm thinking, Lord, this is like a little taste of heaven. And then out of this tunnel, as I walk down these steps, this gospel choir is singing Amazing Grace. I was like, no
awesome.
Way. No, it gets better. I walk across the other side of this fountain and a guy is there with a guitar singing Imagine There's No Heaven. Right as they're singing 10,000 years to praise him, the other guy's singing Imagine There's No Heaven. And I did. I thought, this is it. This, we live between heaven and hell. We live in the in-between. It was really kind of the perfect metaphor.
Well, that's honestly, all jokes aside, you're a friend and pastor to me and to my family, and it's amazing. And I just admire your courage in this because, honestly, I know that in leading out, and so anyone out there is listening who wants to lead or do anything great or any endeavor, any movement in the organization, it takes courage to step out and lead. And to be number one in an Amazon is a phenomenal thing, but it's popular, this thing you're doing, but it's also polarizing. There's a lot of skeptics out there. You see the juxtaposition right there in Central Park. But also, I got to imagine there's people in your own camp who you think would be in your own camp in Christendom who are struggling with this content. So what is it, you know, for you, like, what is it that gave you this audacity? And I mean that in the best possible way. What gave you this kind of audacious sort of spunk to write this book? What was it that motivated you?
Well, I didn't just say, hey, what do I want to write on next? It actually goes all the way back to when I was 16 and my dad was dying of cancer. And I was not a Christian and I didn't know what I believed in. I thought Jesus was probably just a myth. And someone gave him the first book that coined the term near-death experience. And I saw it on his dresser. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking about much of anything except the next party. But death was knocking on our door. And so I picked it up and read it in one night. I read it cover to cover in one night. And after I read it, I said, oh my gosh, Jesus, you're real. I want to be with you when I die. So that was my kind of opening up to even considering faith. And it was the next year that someone invited me into a small group Bible study where I actually started to explore Christian faith and came to faith. So the last 30 or so years, while I've been studying the scriptures, I've also been curious about these near-death experiences. And over that time, I've now read and studied about 1,000 of them. And they can be confusing. And it took me a while to figure out what's going on. And it was only after reading many of them and really looking at many of them and the commonalities and the overlaps and what's happening to understand that really these are describing the life to come that the Bible describes. And so that's what I've done in Imagine Heaven is I've taken about 120 of them and where they share commonalities with one another, but where they also showing how this is what the scriptures have been revealing all along.
Well, what are some of those commonalities?
Well, I talk about 12 commonalities in the book, like, for instance, we're ourselves. I mean, what's amazing is that people, you know, they die. Some for minutes, some for hours, no heartbeat, no brain waves. Then they're resuscitated and they have something to say. And consistently, people say they're out of their physical body and they're observing what's going on initially, but they feel more alive than they have ever been. In fact, they feel more themselves than they've ever been. And not just with like 5 senses, but like with 50 senses. So one of the commonalities is when they come back, they feel like this life is the dull shadow of the real thing we were meant for, which, of course, the scripture says that. That's what we were created for.
I'm sorry. It's so fascinating. Even when you say it now, I can't help but think, because they're called near-death experiences, but I really struggle with it because some of these people, as you said, were gone for 30 minutes, 90 minutes, hours. To me, these are death experiences. I mean, you're gone when you're gone that long. It doesn't feel near death to me. It feels like death.
And it's true. And I think one of the reasons that Moody coined that term near death is because in some cases, people are near death and have a similar experience. And at the same time, you know, it really kind of shifted even the definition of death. And that's something that I point out that I don't think even near-death researchers have seen is that one of the commonalities is that people say they knew there was some border or boundary even in their experience of the other life. There was a border or boundary or threshold they could not cross. And they were aware that if they crossed it, they could not come back to this life. Mm. So that's a very important factor in even in analyzing what are these. Because I don't know that they necessarily say, well, this person was in heaven or that person was in hell, or we don't really know where it was, except it was the beginnings of the afterlife, but there's clearly a threshold they couldn't cross. But, you know, as you look across them, there are other commonalities that are just phenomenal, like beauty. not unlike the earth. I mean, seeing mountains and valleys and forests and flowers, but experienced in other dimensions of time and space. So that's one of the things that people are wrestling with. And what you realize is they're all interpreting this to some degree. It's kind of like, imagine trying to explain to a flat world of two dimensions and black and white what a world of three dimensions with color is like. You're always going to be grappling for words. And in the book, in these 120 people's words and stories that I put in, you can hear them grappling to try to explain what they experienced. So it's not unlike Earth, but it's Earth experienced or Earth-like creation experienced in a whole new realm, in a whole new extra dimensionality. We know each other. We have a relationship. Commonly, people experience this brilliant man of light who is brighter than the sun, who is unconditional love, in whose presence they never want to leave him. And that's consistent. And he knows them personally. He's not some impersonal force. He is personal. And they know he's God. And they know their every thought and motive, yet they never want to leave his presence. In his presence, they feel like they're home. Those who know Jesus know he's Jesus. Those who don't know who he is. And it's subject to their interpretation. But I show how the person they're describing is exactly who the prophets described. It's who the Apostle Paul, the Apostle John described seeing the risen Jesus. Another commonality is in his presence, many times they'll have a life review. So they'll re-experience their entire lives, but in a whole new way. So, you know, time has shifted somewhat. I mean, very much so. So they can't tell you if it happened instantly or it took forever, but they re-experience their whole lives, but from the perspective of the other people they interacted with. So they actually feel how their loving or unloving actions affected other people. They see the ripple effect of their actions. They can see their lives in a whole new dimension. And it really, that has a huge impact on people when they return to the earth.
Well, what I love about this book and the series that we're doing, and I highly recommend for anyone who makes decisions about what they do on Sundays, a series through Imagine Heaven. I mean, the interviews you've been doing and the insights that you share that are from the scriptures in your book, I think you've done such a great job of helping skeptics have kind of an open mind of what could be. But I also think it's been really helpful for those who believe to start living for what really matters, loving God and loving people. But I also think it's a great book for those who want to believe. I'd love to hear in the midst of your interviews and conversations, and even the response here in Austin has been enormous at our Gateway campuses. What are you seeing in terms of a response to your book?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, this is just a topic that it's hot in culture right now, but it's also just something that's in the back of everyone's mind. I mean, I think that's why, you know, news is wanting to talk about it. But at our church, I mean, my gosh, we've seen like a 40% increase in attendance during this series, and people inviting their neighbors, people buying like 10 books to give away to all their friends and neighbors and relatives who don't believe. And we've had people coming up after every service telling us they've given their lives to Christ. But I do think, Eric, I think it's equally, in fact, I think it's even more impactful for Christians. Because you think about it. I mean, honestly, how many Christians live for eternity? You know, and we can picture a great retirement or a great next purchase, and so we'll plan for it, save for it, sacrifice for it, work for it. That's why it's so important to imagine heaven. Because like Jesus said, it is life abundant. It is life. It's more real. That's something consistent people say. And they struggle with words, but they say, this is not the real thing. That is more real than this is. This is the shadow of the real life to come. Which, by the way, Hebrews 8 tells us that. That even what God gave Moses for the tabernacle was a shadow of the real thing in heaven. And so I think that's a huge thing happening in the hearts of Christians too, is they're starting to realize, oh my gosh, you mean when Jesus said that there'll be real treasure in heaven and real property that will last and real responsibilities like rulership of nations or cities and real work to do and like life and real relationships and parties and celebrations and beauty and cities and culture and all the things we love about this life? Yes, and so much more. And it's only though when Christians can imagine that, that they'll actually start to live for it. If they can, if they imagine something less real, I'm sorry, but they're not going to sacrifice and really live for it.
It's so great. It's I know all the things you're saying are totally true for me and for my house. We it's been very helpful for us. I even, in light of the things that you've presented, and I love the your analytical mind for it and the research that you've done, it's brilliant. But it's made me stop and realize, why do I get so upset about so many things here? This is not the end of this. And I act so much like it is. So thanks for that, for sure.
Well, I do. I think there's something powerful about reading, you know, like, I mean, I weave the scriptures all throughout it. So you can see this is what the Bible says. But how many people really take the time to study all the different places where the scriptures talk about the life to come? You know, and put it together. And when you put it together and then you hear it talked about through the lives of multiple people who died and said, I've seen something like that. And then all of a sudden, I mean, like when you, it blew me away when I read blind people, for instance, describing this heavenly environment where they're going up a hill toward this magnificent wall that was made of gemstones, but light was coming out of it. And these are blind people who've been blind from birth, and they're describing the same thing that a spine surgeon and a commercial airline pilot and a pastor who saw the same wall of the city of the New Jerusalem, saw the same, you know, pearlescent gate that they say is not like, you know, the things we've pictured, like this gaudy pearl, you know, like a big pearl stuck on something, or I used to picture wrought iron gates with pearls glued to it, you know? I mean, just kind of like ridiculous images that I had in my mind, but they don't describe anything like that. It's this mesmerizing substance of another world that is just beauty and alive, and they're describing the same things. And it's exactly what John tries to describe in Revelation 21, but you're hearing it. It's kind of like a car accident with witnesses on multiple corners. And it's only as you put them all together that you start to see what's really going on. And that's what I think is happening here, is it's not that near-death experiences are adding any new content to the scriptures. It's kind of like you could see Gone with the Wind in an old black and white version, or you could see Gone with the Wind or some new movie in 3D surround sound. Same content, but it's a whole different experience.
The book is Imagine Heaven, Near-Death Experiences, God's Promises, and the Exhilarating Future That Awaits You. GatewayChurch.com/podcast to watch, or for other resources, go to johnburkeonline.com. John, this has been such an important message, and I love that your analytical, engineering, entrepreneurial mind has really helped us look at what the future could be. And I know, Rob, you have a question we always like to ask of folks with entrepreneurial ventures.
Yeah, so this is a standard question, John, we ask all our guests here on Start Good Things. And it's basically this. As someone who started many things and you know the rigors and all that sort of thing that go into it, imagine right now you're in an elevator with an entrepreneur who has altruistic leanings, meaning they want to do something with meaning and impact. They want to start something and they want it to have some meaning and some impact, positive impact on humanity. You're in this elevator. There's 30 seconds to get to the ground floor. And in these 30 seconds, you need to give them one piece of indispensable advice. What is it? Go.
It's the mantra that I've had to say to myself over and over and over again. It's not about you, John. Because anytime you're going to launch out and start something, it's going to take dying to yourself and doing it for God and doing it to help other people. And it feels many times like you're dying because it has no momentum when you start. So people aren't easily getting on board, and you feel like, I'm failing, I'm not doing this right, I'm not doing it well. And you just have to keep thinking not about yourself, but about why this is important. Why does this matter? Why does starting this venture, why is it going to help humanity? And why it's worth me going for it, you know? Go big or go home. If it's worth it, then it's worth dying for. And so really, you know, being willing to kind of lay your life down day after day and say, okay, God, if you're in this, let me go for it and let me go big, and not holding back. But there is a dying to self in an ongoing kind of way that I think you have to do. But there's a real freedom in that too, because then you realize, well, I can't really fail. I can go for it, and if it doesn't happen the way I thought, then I'll figure out the next way forward.
Ding. All right, that's the elevator. I think it was about a minute ride, but that's good. It was worth it. That was a great minute. It was totally worth it.
Thank you so much, John, for taking the time to share with us some of the insights from Imagine Heaven and insights as an entrepreneur and artist.
Yeah, John, thanks so much for being with us, man. We appreciate you very much.
Hey, man, I just want to say, if I can, these two guys are the most amazing leaders and men of God, who character and competency and the whole thing. So learn from them, because they are great, wise leaders. So thank you guys for taking the time to interview me.
Oh, thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Wow, that was a great interview. Such a great guy. And you hear this expression all the time. Eric and I were talking about this. I know you hear it a lot. Couldn't happen to a better guy. But I promise you, that expression couldn't be any more true in this circumstance. John is the real deal.
He absolutely is. I'm so glad people are picking up this book and really being inspired by it.
Yeah, totally agree. And it's funny too, Eric, because that first question I asked, it's just a snarky question coming out about Lennon and juxtaposing him and Lennon. And then John comes back with this brilliant response. It was just brilliant.
You know, if I was listening, I would think that was planned, but I assure you it absolutely was not planned.
Indeed, it was not. All right, Eric, if someone's interested in finding out more about John, how do they do that?
johnburkeonline.com, johnburke online.com. And if you're a church leader, I highly recommend going through Imagine Heaven as a series on Sunday. We did it here at Austin at Gateway Church, and it was fantastic and well-received. There's some great discounts on buying books in bulk. If you send an email to info@imagineheaven.net, they can also give you more on the transcripts. It's a fantastic series.
Yeah, and you know, even if you're not a church leader, in fact, if you're not a church person at all, that is okay. Here at Start Good Things, what we're trying to do is inspire and empower people from all walks of life to start good things.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for episode 1 of the Start Good Things podcast. He's Rob.
And he's Eric. And thanks for allowing ourselves to introduce ourselves.